Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hey, welcome to This Life. What'd you say there, Bob?
Rocky Mountain Rehab. Can you tell us a few things about them?
Well, I will tell you. It's a residential treatment program in Great Falls, Montana. And I've spoken to the clinical director and the medical director, and I am no hyperbole, impressive people. Been in the field a long time. They're an absence-based program. They're a program that Bob and I can sign off on, and we can't say that about many programs.
And they gave us an idea, and I want to have the guy on somehow, either via Skype, because I want to know what goes on in Montana and the treatment community. Because if you've been reading the stuff that's coming out about Florida, have you read that thing about them selling drug addicts?
I saw what you're posting on Facebook, Bob. I did see that. let me just say they have some equine therapy, so if you're into that kind of thing, it can be very useful. The premise is that you can reach emotions with the bodily based connection rather than words that horses help you connect. And we saw some of that in Celebrity Rehab. Remember, I was a little skeptical, but that guy was good, and it helps people just connect, get to their emotions, feel again.
Can I be honest?
And you can be. Let me just say though. Look, that does not substitute for the hard work of recovery, which takes months and months and months. So you go up there, you stay. What?
Well, I was very skeptical about it because all the Malibu places advertised it, right? I thought it was just a marketing tool, a gimmicky thing, until I met this woman, Susie Landelfi, and she runs the Wounded Warriors program. It opens those guys up.
Yeah.
There's something very powerful in it. Then you have to be a highly skilled, this is what I think the Malibu places missed, a highly skilled therapist to help them access that, close them back up. Go home
it.
And don't beat your wife. Type stuff.
Regulate it.
And I don't think that why we were skeptical about it is I didn't believe that anybody highly skilled was going to be there if it did open them up.
Right. This is something people have grave misconceptions about is that they feel like, oh, I'm going to get out my feelings and like I'll discharge them and they'll go out into the vapors. That'll be the end of it. No. They stay. In fact, they're amplified sometimes, and you have to learn to regulate them, and that requires another person, a skilled person. You guys have been doing a great job of checking their website, but people have not been necessarily checking in to Rocky Mountain Treatment.
Well, I think, that's another thing that being your sidekick for 15 years now.
Yeah.
You're sidekick. Such a great, but I am. I'm where they're getting the inquiries via the Dr. Drew audience, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions that need answering. That's what you spend your time doing. A lot of addiction questions, a lot of my daughter's on heroin, what do I do?
Yep.
It's not necessarily somebody that's queued up that wants rehab.
Right.
Right?
That's right. That's
and that's why we're going to start a company that does all that.
Yes, we will get, so stay tuned for that. Also, as far as this podcast goes, make sure you go to iTunes, give it a 5-star rating, share our post on Dr. Drew Facebook page. Get the word out. Again, about this podcast, we want to try to grow it. DrDrew.com is taking your emails at thedrdrew.com/contact. And we will try to use your life experiences as a topic for discussion. But again, we cannot,
do that.
Well, I have to disclaim
just
it.
Just blame me.
No, I can't. We have to sort of, we can't answer directly because it violates all kinds of ethical and licensing issues and stuff. But I can answer enough that you'll get educated about the material that you can then use yourself. All right. As it pertains to that, we're going to do some emails today and bring in our guest, Simone Bien.
Oh,
Simone Bien.
It's so good to be here.
The most beloved therapist in Los Angeles, according to my clients.
Oh,
yes, and I could see where that would happen. HelpingYourRelationship.com, is that you?
Uh-huh.
Fantastic. HelpYourRelationship.com. Simone did Loveline for a while. There's two things I want to get in today. I want to get a little bit of the history of Loveline, because Susan brought out the Wikipedia on Loveline, and there's all kinds of weird misinformation there about you there, particularly, number one. Some accurate, which I was so surprised. I mean, it was so subtle stuff that only like you and I would know about.
But I'm a bit worried now.
Yeah, no, it's all good. And we can do a little history of that, and then we're going to get in sex relationship with someone. Okay, Bob, good with that?
I'm ready for that.
Yeah, I think we have a bunch.
I think we can get into mine.
Can I ask you two whether you did see the 2020 documentary?
Oh, I called him. I texted him.
I was going to, actually. Oh, and then did you hate it?
I hated it. The Suboxone advertisement.
Yeah.
How interesting.
It drives us crazy.
See, I didn't pick up on that. I picked up on
how bad the heroin problem is.
I could not believe it.
Oh, it's so awful. Oh, I thought you knew.
So tragic.
47,000 kids are going to die this year.
And 1 in 25, have I got that statistic right? 1 in 25 babies a day are born
opioid addicted. But that's
pills. That's not heroin. That's not heroin. Yeah. That's pills. That's my profession.
It's the widest. It's a tsunami across America.
Is that the word I've been using for how many years? 10 years. But there was something I wanted to say about that. Hang on.
Let's get on to that. One in 25 babies in America are born addicted to opioids.
There was a great study I saw in Journal of Addiction Medicine or something just today, and it was comparing causes of death in America, why there's a gap in certain causes of in youthful deaths in this country. Yeah. They looked at why Americans die young as compared to other industrialized countries.
Yeah.
It's not our healthcare system. What are we dying of? Violence. Guns, accidents, drugs, and alcohol. That's it. Gosh.
And all those things relate to trauma. Trauma.
18 times higher than the rest of the world.
And why did you say it wasn't the healthcare system?
Well, it's people always go, it's because we don't get proper healthcare and blah, 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 and the delivery of healthcare. No, it's just...
And I'll say it's Big Pharma trying to kill us all, and he doesn't agree.
It's not. That's Suboxone. The opioid story, as far as it goes to Big Pharma now, is Suboxone. The actual distribution of OxyContin and Vicodin, that's my profession.
But how it got, and that's actually what came out in the big congressional investigation or whatever.
Oh my God. And then the CDC, Centers for Disease Control.
I thought they threw doctors under the bus.
No, they did what they're supposed to do, which is tell them not to prescribe opiates or else. Then the government, then the Washington, drug czar comes out and goes, everybody, let it ring across the land. Chronic opioid use for chronic pain is not effective. Therefore, follow your local guidelines for prescribing opiates. It's literally like saying this blood pressure medicine does not work. So follow proper guidelines for the blood pressure. It's so insane. It's the same thing again.
It's just stated
with a little more threat attached to it. Like, be aware you're killing people.
And what I realized actually watching that documentary is that, yes, England is very small. I cannot believe I'm going to side note. Drew once said to me, Simone, what you got to realize is the problems are bigger here than you've ever seen. And I will be honest with you. I love Drew. And I thought, what's he talking about? I know the portion sizes are bigger, Drew, but there's a difference between burgers and fries and trauma. Because I thought trauma is trauma. And then over the years since we've been friends, and it sticks in my head, the stories that I hear day in, day out of people. I speak to my colleagues back home and they say, I don't think I've seen one person like that, or maybe one person in my 30-year career.
And we see them routinely.
Yeah. And seeing them
now,
all the time.
This is the part I want you to tell Bob. Your hair is going to stand up straight with this. So we went and visited Simone in London a year and a half ago. She very kindly took us to a dinner at 11th Century Inn in the Hampstead Heath, and where her dad has a house and blah, 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 blah. And it was lovely and romantic. We had a wonderful time. And in the course of it, she had been that week, right?
Yeah.
To visit the premier drug and alcohol treatment center in the United Kingdom. And actually, Priory, or whatever it's called?
Yeah.
And actually was there with the guy that's the lead physician in the whole group. And what did you tell me?
Well, let's just say, and we have to be a little bit careful,
yes,
because I know they'll be listening. I was blown away by the enabling. Blown away.
She was counseling them on how to manage alcoholics and addicts.
I know.
And then all you need to see is the Amy Winehouse documentary. And have you seen that documentary?
Does that make sense?
I saw it twice.
And you see what went on there? And it was worse than what was portrayed in the documentary, apparently. I talked to the young guy that was the manager originally. He and I did a presentation for a screening of the film. And he said that the one guy that said, hey, I can't admit you with your boyfriend. Are you kidding? Yeah. That was the only guy that was willing to set limits. Everybody else actually, quote, let her have parties, unquote, in her treatment center.
That's in London, but Priory's outside of town, and she's been there before also by herself.
I've got to say, the Priory have a phenomenal reputation because of the celebrities.
But let me tell you what went wrong with them. You want to know? Because I used to know the clinical director who now moved back to Brazil because he was so disgusted. They wanted to franchise that and have Priories all over England, eight of them.
You
can't multiply great programs because great programs are just the great people that run them.
Right. That's absolutely true.
Yeah, and to go along with what both of you are saying, that really makes sense because the person I met I just was blown away about, hold on a minute, why aren't we talking about you going into treatment? And what would happen is they would come over every time this guy, I won't name him, super, super wealthy, every time that he would pretty much have a near overdose from like pills and alcohol, they would call this doctor and the doctor would come himself and be like,
Already bad.
All right, you come to the treatment center, it'll only be $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, and we'll get you clean. He goes out again, and the cycle continues. And how much is he making? Like from this one person, from 1 year, in dollars, $180,000, with no treatment.
That's of house calls.
But I must tell you, though, that stuff...
Drew doesn't mind that as bad as bad programs.
That's
actually
right.
That's right. To me, that's shame on the patient for being such a terrible customer. You know what I mean? By being willing to pay that asshole. That kind
Scott Weiland used to pay that all the time.
That's insane. That's insanity. But the fact that this is like the old school stuff they used to at Los Encinas 60 years ago, which they would just clean people up.
Yeah,
that's what they use. They clean them up, send them back out again. And they think that's treatment. Oh, a little TLC, they'll be fine. You know.
Yeah.
And that's just
yeah.
all.
Well, this is what's happening.
Isn't there a belief, because Chito is how you say his name, but his real name is Tito. He's from Brazil. Uh-huh. He was the clinical director there, and he quit about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he's old school like us, right?
Oh, well, so good. And that was in there. So
yeah, that's why the Priory was good, because it had that old school. Because
right.
there's vibrant AA in England. I've been to it.
I know.
No bullshit. More hardcore than here.
It's like the Atlantic group or something.
Yeah, all
And when you say more hardcore than here, what do you mean?
Just no bullshit. Stop whining. Grow up a little bit. Take responsibility.
They watch Mary Poppins.
I've got lots of patients
because
like that.
Because the idea
is... They're just going, shut up. Get out of here. You haven't got a prayer of getting sober. Get the fuck out of here.
Because
they shut up.
Well, what the old guys at White Flag used to say were Father Terry's meeting. Therapy is therapy. If you want to go to therapy, go to therapy.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah. Because AA is very specific. It says a lot of people are going to need outside help. You should go to therapy, psychology.
Trauma.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is about us as a community supporting you in not drinking.
Yeah.
It's not therapy. And so now with the way that rehab, and I think we were contributing to it a little bit, is therapy and AA got all mushed together.
Oh, and
rehab centers.
Doctors got involved with it and stuff.
Yeah, and doctors think they know about AA.
Well,
and
some do.
You know what I mean?
Some do, but don't.
A couple that are in it.
Yeah, recovering guys do, right. That used to be the old school, too, by the way. That's why recovering physicians used to be the ones running programs.
Alcohol wards.
Yeah, because they understood this stuff, and the rest of us kind of didn't. I'm the only you've said this to me a million times. I'm the only not recovering guy that seems to understand it. But part of what I do, if you don't,
that comes from your residency experience with Robert Young.
No, fuck no. It was years and years and years of being around you guys and doing it and Barry and everybody. And you notice I will not see an addict alone. Because I know I will still get sucked into the plan.
But wasn't that the hook, though? Like, Los Encinas really did treat alcoholics for 100 years. And you came in there in the early 80s, was it?
No, Mike Myers was there. Mike Myers was there and set up what was the woman's name? A great therapist. I can't remember her name. Betty something. And they had...
Great name for a therapist.
They had a comprehensive, on Breyer, 28-day... every form of therapy you could imagine, and long-term follow-up with their patients. Insurances those days paid for...
In what years?
80 to 87.
And it was a psych side?
It was on Breyer.
But was it psych billed? What insurance paid for that?
They used to pay for drug treatment that way. They would pay for everything. They would pay for that, and then they just started cranking it down because the recidivism was high and whatnot. And they started saying, why are you doing this? We don't need to do it. The outcomes are the same if you keep them in 3 days or 3 months. And to some extent, they were onto something. We all know that. But the point is, Mike Myers, here's what drew me in. I was running the medical services. I was learning about the psychiatric care of medical care of psychiatric patients, and I became expert in that. People were always having me evaluate their medical problem. And I was spending most of my time dealing with the medical complications of psychiatric medication.
Gosh.
That's mostly what I was spending my time doing, frankly. And the other thing was screening out people who were inappropriately admitted to a psychiatric hospital that actually had a medical problem causing their psychiatric symptoms. That happened almost every day. Wow. It was
with elderly patients or no?
Just shitty medical care. Just not careful medical care. I'd find cancers. I'd find heart disease.
Ooh.
Stuff that was causes depression, and they'd be admitted for depression. No, they didn't know they had it, but it causes those things.
When you told them, I'm sure that brightened them
up. Well, no, they were... No, literally, they were like, I thought something was wrong. You know, it didn't feel right. Anyway.
I'm going to die, but at least I'm not mad.
Well, we can...
Yeah.
I'm joking.
Get out of here.
So, oh my God, there's so many cases like that I saw. But, and so because I was seeing all the medical problems, guess where most of the medical problems were? Down on the drug unit.
Fibromyalgia.
No. It, endocarditis, tuberculosis. Oh, I mean, yeah. It was the real deal back then. And I went down there. I was like, oh, my God, this guy Mike Myers has put up these protocols for detoxing patients. I hadn't seen 1,000 heroin addicts, alcoholics. No one ever trained me on it, how to withdraw. It was all haphazard. Lots of Haldol used on alcoholics. I mean, it was random, and every resident did it differently. And I thought, oh, my God, there's a discipline to retreat. I'm going to learn how to do this. I got very good at it. That's why I started seeing lots of addicts and alcoholics. But Bob, the entire time, I would look through. I would come to the drug unit. I would hang out with everybody.
I thought
down
you were
there.
Fascinated by them.
Wait, well then I would look through the window at the 12-step on the wall there, same in 1988 as in 2008 when we were there, and I would go, "What is that crazy nonsense?"
That's what most doctors think.
I do real medicine. What goes on in those rooms, you guys? That's ridiculous. I remember Colleen, nurse.
Yeah, Colleen.
Yeah, Colleen kind of brought me around, and we saw some interesting cases, and I saw people go from these medical messes to these vibrant young people that were better than they ever knew they could be. And I thought, oh my God, there's nowhere in medicine you can do that. What just happened? I wanted to see more of this. And that's how I got involved. And that was probably 87, 88, 89. You know,
there it is.
So that's
the history of Dr. Drew's obsession with drug addicts.
But, I'm not sure it's an obsession. It's just
fascination.
I find them, I find it a rich window into the human being.
I remember you said to me once when I was asking you about alcoholics, and we were talking about family history stuff, and you said that alcoholics are probably some of the most intelligent, richest, funniest, most wonderful people that you've ever met.
Absolutely. Just think of how many we've lost to this disease. Yeah.
Yeah.
W.C. Fields was at what Lawson Cenas when he died.
Yeah, he died there.
He died at Briar.
No.
Oh, in the little
Rose
bungalow.
Rose Gardens. Yeah. But now listen, the other thing is, I promise to do
how
a little
sex play into all this. That's
we're
going to
get there.
For.
We're going to get there. I want to get a little love line history going.
The little
here. We'll
70s part of me can't wait to start talking.
All right, good.
The 70s part.
If you have questions, Simone will be happy.
I came of age in the 70s. That was quite a... So now, though, the prim and proper Victorian era we live in now.
Oh, you think now is prim and proper? My goodness.
Yeah. We'll get hang on.
Compared to the 70s and 80s?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the 70s are all the trauma that we're living with was initiated as whatever you're into, man. You like kids? Oh, that's cool. Whatever you're into.
Oh, no, it wasn't. That's not true.
You think I'm kidding? That's how that shit got going. Because there was a lot of, hey, man, whatever you were into, it's cool. Remember that?
No, I was 15.
What I'm saying is the child abusers took advantage of that attitude and everyone blinked. I'm not saying they actually endorse it or anything, but little love line history here.
Uh-huh.
So you joined us, when was it, 4 years ago, 5 years ago?
Yeah, it was much longer than, it must have been 5 years.
Okay, and the what the Wikipedia suggests is that...
By the way, can I just say, the Wikipedia ages me, and listen to my reverse logic. I actually thought that, do you know what? If this was younger, I would keep the lie. And I was like, and now karma has got the better. So now at least for a year, I've got to keep the lie going that I'm older than I am.
Okay, for 1 year. You get used to it.
For 1 year,
get used
yeah.
to this.
That's good.
That's sort of how my OCD operates. If something bad's going to happen, bring it now.
Yeah, exactly.
So you came on because Norm heard you somewhere. Norm Pattis, who still owns the digital rights to Loveline, and was the radio brains at that point. He invented Westwood One, and he distributed all these radio syndicating
also
deals.
Known as the Laker guy.
Yeah, he stands at the Laker sideline every day, every game. And he found you somehow. I don't know how.
I think he found me, bizarrely, through Telepictures, who had brought me over to work with... you.
Yes.
My fine gentleman friend.
Yes, we did a pilot that ended up becoming a daytime show.
Yeah. And they asked, Norm said, who's the best person? And because you were doing your daytime show yeah. and you were traveling being Dr. Drew and like world famous and amazing, they said he's going to be away for quite, you know, he's going to be away. Who's your best? And they recommended me. You endorsed me. Mm-hmm. And then I go, oh, he never endorses anyone. Oh, Simone. You know, and then that's how I started.
And were you on with Mike? Just yeah. you and Mike?
No, no, the three of us were there most of the time.
So, but some, but you were traveling, I remember.
And but you know, Drew would often, and this is what I think about Drew. He's such a powerhouse. He would be filming at 5 o'clock in the morning to go on GMA, and yet he'd be doing Loveline till 1 o'clock in New York, like taking all the calls.
I mean, anymore.
He would just be amazing.
He used to do the daytime show in one of the patient rooms in the trailer at PRC when we were doing Celebrity Rehab.
I had a daytime.
He'd run out to the trailer.
I had a daytime radio show then.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know. He's phenomenal. And actually, the executive producer of Rehab and I were talking about like how inferior we feel and will always feel in comparison to Dr. Drew.
Stop
because
it,
it's like, how
it.
Does
vomit.
He do his time management and working? And do you know what Joel said to me? So Joel Rogers was the EP. He's amazing.
Remember Joel?
Surfer
yeah.
Joel.
Yeah. And Joel was our supervising producer for Celebrity Rehab a couple shows.
And he said, I said, oh, Drew's doing really well and he's doing this. And he said, you know, there's one thing that I always know about Dr. Drew and I'm never going to have to assume. He's always busy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he said that the perfection to time was amazing because, like, you would always come back. You'd go and do the Loveline show. You'd go and do Loveline. And then you would say, okay, there's an emergency. No problem. I can meet you at 1:13 on the way back.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
I've got this much. And they were like, wow, it's amazing. And he was saying, when Drew said 1:13,
oh, no.
It was 1:30.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I got to be down to the minute. Time to take a break. We'll take a break. We're right back.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation in the This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest podcast or interaction with drdrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction per se. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the sites or podcasts.
And welcome back to This Life Podcast. We're working with Simone Bien today, our dear friend and colleague. And a reminder, hit up the Amazon banner at drdrew.com when you need to make a purchase in your everyday life. The podcast needs your support to keep this damn thing going. Also, bookmark the Amazon link to our website, drdrew.com, and or if you want, thislifepodcast.com. And
I'll do that. Good, I have
please.
The Amazon app
yeah,
on...
Yeah, yeah. And if you click through on my website, drdrew.com, or yep. thislifepodcast.com, you... throw a little something. It doesn't cost you anything, but a little something comes the way of the podcast.
Well, so. Do you know I need to do that? I'm spending a fortune on Amazon. I do you know what Amazon is really bad for and really good for? I mean, talk about having...
getting stuff you don't need.
Yeah. Well, yes, getting stuff you don't need. Racking up a huge credit card bill of like $80. What's $80? Like seven
yeah.
times a
yeah.
week. And also just being claustrophobic. Or agoraphobic. Just
stay home.
I don't need to ever go out again.
If you
ever.
Get Amazon food delivered.
Oh, I've just started doing that. That's it. Never going to see anybody.
Go to Dr.com.
There's the best
that.
Ad for Amazon
love,
in a long time.
You know,
there's
Amazon.
Another. There's a. Susan, I was meaning to tell you about this food organization. Let's see. Is it called Postmates? They'll collect. Pick up anything anywhere for you if you order it out.
Well, Grubhub, there's a lot of different ones that
yeah.
do it.
You know what I want to hear about? I want to hear about Simone.
Oh, hi, Susan.
I want to hear about Simone and her experience on Loveline and what happened in that Wikipedia, Loveline.
Okay,
Wikipedia.
So
yeah,
so
I'm
we,
very
so
intrigued
he,
about
well,
it.
It was,
about how much you work, because we know how much you work. It's
yeah,
not about
it was
you.
Sort of, no, it was sort of saying, she didn't want to hear about me at all. So,
that was very, I don't know if that was producer direction or real life stuff or
what.
Or
a little bit of sex fantasy playing out.
A little bit of both.
If anyone's seen Billions, brilliant show on Showtime, and basically there's a very hot therapist, and she's into BDSM. And I've got to say, your wife was actually just like her.
Yeah.
Susan,
yeah.
You were just like her.
Well, on what
hot.
Show?
Billions.
A show called Billions.
There's so many shows.
Paul Giamatti, so many good shows.
Yeah.
That's Paul Giamatti, right?
Yeah.
I flew next to my plane.
So
listen,
you're
listen.
Staying home, ordering Amazon, and watching shows TV. We've never heard of.
No, it's a very popular show.
Is it?
I flew next to him on a flight back from New York or something about a year or two ago. And God, what a nice, smart guy. His parents were Yale professors.
Oh, you're
he
kidding.
Went to Yale, studied literature. And I was like, I could not get enough of him.
And he played Jerry Heller in NWA's movie, didn't he?
I'm not that cool.
Yeah, that's right. He did. He's just a great actor.
Right. So, Love Line.
All right. So things started going. And the Wikipedia suggests that it was social media rising up against you and taking social media always beats the crap out of us. You know, they just do.
Yeah.
I don't remember that being much of anything.
Well, I think what did happen, and it's so interesting, this with social media, and it's really helped me not judge people, you know, when they have bad reviews. The haters always, they make the loudest noise. And you can say anything to help anyone, and the haters will be there. They will pick on something. You will tell a woman to feel empowered. And yes, if her husband, the seventh husband, has cheated on her again, if you say, yes, the message is, look at where the pattern is and everything you need inside you, and you can do this and feel empowered and go and sort your shit out, then I'm the woman hater. Mm. So what happened on Love Line was our dear friend Mike would have... character who was very funny, but a character who was Rudy's
been on the show.
Rudy's.
And I was given, and this is, I have a lot of male friends and sort of, you know, go along with it, but I was given behind the scenes, right, you are speaking for women and you have to be the women's voice and you have to stand up to Mike, you have to even stand up to Drew, you know, you have to be that voice. Yeah. So I was doing my job, I was that voice. And the people, I mean, it was a little bit ridiculous. The, you know, the haters.
Well,
this
wasn't
why I kicked that.
No, not at all. I don't remember being anything, frankly.
I do. It was money.
What? Oh, it was money. I know. No, but I don't mean the social media amounting to anything that troubled us.
And
it's just routine nonsense in social
exactly.
media.
Exactly. And I remember, actually, Drew, you and I talking, and Bob, I'm sure, you two help people, like, save their own life. And you get shit for it. It's just ridiculous. And I remember you saying, oh, get used to it. Because the more followers you have, the more you can expect of this.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? That has been in my head all the time, going, it's all right.
Now
Drew's told me
now
it's all right.
Even evolved to the point where if you're not getting negative social media traction, there's something wrong.
Right.
You got to worry you're not reaching enough people. Because people always come out negatively now. It's a very cantankerous world we live in. But what I remember is, I think radio was going, you know, radio's changed a ton. Since
I know,
you were,
so
you
were, sad.
And it was shrinking. Its revenues were shrinking dramatically. And
people
I think
are panicking.
And I think Norm was looking for a way to limit his expenses.
Yeah.
And I remember you got in a little row with him over a more work he wanted you to do on a video.
Yeah.
And he all of a sudden fired you.
Yeah.
And that was that.
Yeah.
And that's all. We didn't know it was coming. It was just boom. All of a sudden, Simone vanished. And
if we say it kind of sounds very bewitched when we say it. I twitched my nose and I was gone.
And it was a time when revenues, radio really.
Yeah, but do you know
shrunk.
What the frustrating thing is? What you know, going out with a bang was nice. I know it was a financially driven decision.
That's
and
what I figured.
And also I understand the way it was done. Wasn't, you know, was not what I call graceful, but welcome to
business.
The industry.
Yeah.
So
business.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But what was so annoying is that when I joined, we got a new EP. We basically, and this was with Mike, you and me, we got the show from sort of, we rebranded the show and the show kicked ass. We were number one in Los Angeles in the time slot. We got the highest ratings in 5 years or something. We got all these really wonderful things, but because of the radio model, isn't the same as it was then. It wasn't translating to figures. So that's the unfortunate thing.
Right.
And you know what was happening? This was how long? 7 years ago?
Four or five years ago?
Yeah, about 5 years ago.
What was happening was all the revenue, I know a little bit about this now because that's what I'm learning about you guys. the revenue, the advertising revenue, went away from terrestrial radio to pay-per-clicks and internet advertisement that did not create the revenue, the sales that they thought it would. Then they turned around and they went to alternative sources like podcasts. Mm. Everybody's looking for where to advertise.
You're right and wrong. You're right and wrong. Radio revenue is the only medium that has only had a 5% drop in ad revenue. In fact, I'm sorry, it was about a, might be like an 8% drop, but it went up 5% in the last year. So radio is the one platform that has maintained its status in terms of its local, particularly because it's so local and it's so intimate. What fell apart was syndication. Syndication completely fell apart. It does not exist anymore. So that's what happened.
And
it was a certain model within radio completely fell apart.
And also, let's
watch it, what I know. Rehabs used to advertise on television and radio.
Yeah.
They stopped and started doing pay-per-clicks, internet optimization or whatever it's called. Uh-huh. They got about the same bang for their buck, so they figured, oh, we don't need radio. Then that stopped, right?
Yeah, but different sort of customers come through the
now ad. They went back to television
or whatever. They just, that's just, I don't know anything about advertising, but that's
also what's
it
interesting
works.
In local radio, because this happened in England, it also happened in Australia. What happened in local radio is they would actually sell the spots. So they would get in a real estate expert, and they would have the afternoon slot from 2 to 4,
and they pay for that.
And they pay for
it. No, that's going on now.
And,
that's happening
and
now.
That is,
yeah.
I mean, that doesn't happen in England yet, but that happened here, and yeah. I found that absolutely
that's 30 minutes of advertisement.
Nuts. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's basically an infomercial.
It's the same thing as infomercial on television. Yeah. It's just on radio. Although, again, I would defend radio a little bit because it tends to be, because it is so intimate, it's such long form, people have to know what they're talking about.
Yeah,
you know what
no,
I mean?
They,
you actually can tell whether somebody really knows their stuff or not, and welcome them. If that's fine, if they want to advertise something worthwhile for somebody, go do it. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Susan, let's talk about sex. We got
I
know,
if anybody wants radio. To buy any ad space on Loveline, we have some available.
Yeah, Loveline or this podcast.
Yeah.
We have quite a bit available.
No, but here's
Mike
the thing.
Is leaving Loveline now.
I think everybody's going around trying to find an advertising that returns them bang for their buck.
Of course.
And it's hard.
That's business.
So what my thing is that people who need rehab information need to seek out where you go. And that's the problem is you're so guarded about what you'll give a blessing to. So now I'm going to have to get in an airplane and go
evaluate these places.
Just so we can survive.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do, buddy. That's what we're going to do. But now yeah. Mike is leaving, and I don't want any rumors about Mike. Mike has got a ton of great stuff happening on the television side. He has.
I've always been amazed that he could do what he does and then come there at night, because I'm not going to blow smoke up you, but he is not you. Neither am I. I don't want to work as hard as you do. You know what I mean? And I felt like for the last 3 years, he's been trying to do what
hard.
You do.
Yes, he did.
And it kills you. Get home at 12:30 at night. And
well,
then
he did. And it is. I think now he has a 2-year-old daughter.
Try having a sick baby all night after
right.
that.
And, that's right. And I have a wife that's a saint, and she pulled through triplets in my crazy workaholism. Mm. I don't know how she did that and stayed with me.
I'd like
that,
to hear about
amazing.
That because everybody wants to know about that.
Well, go. She's
that
sitting
two
right
to
here.
Four. The 2 to 4 is just a nightmare. If you hear my
yes.
chest now, Elvis is sick all weekend. Now I've got it. Whatever it is, mucus in my upper respiratory. He had 103 temperature on Saturday night. I haven't slept. It's been a nightmare.
Oh,
right?
So sorry.
How did you do it if he was at work all the time?
I had help. He could afford help, and I
nobody's gonna stay up from 2:30 in the morning till 4:30 in the morning,
well,
are they?
That's my
but listen,
thing.
Even to say there is help, you know what they do to mom. The kids insist on mom all the time, and so
yeah,
she just
when
did
he
it.
Would leave town, he would come back after a week, and I was ready to kill myself because yeah. there it's God. The emotional part of it
yeah.
where they need your emotional moments, and he would come through the door and I would just go take them for like 15 minutes. I have yeah. to take a break.
And I remember Drew saying to me, which really hit home, was that you were changing 30 diapers
yeah.
plus
oh, yeah.
a day.
Easy.
And it's like, oh my goodness.
I signed up for the workaholic, but I didn't know I was going to have triplets. So
yeah. We found out we were having triplets. We went to a hotel and we spent the weekend locked in a room and just talked about it. And we've at the end of it, we have every reason to reduce. So they call it selective reduction.
Really? Which, they do that?
Oh, they told us to do that. But we were against it in principle. But we said, okay, we'll think about it. Because they said, look, we will get you three healthy babies, but your marriage won't survive. And it's unhealthy for triplets to be raised, you know, because they need more than the mom can give. And we went back in and we thought, gosh, we can't do this. Wow. We can't do this. And every reason that we thought about reduction was so spurious. And finally, we looked at each other, and I really felt like I was at a poker table. And I just went, okay, I'm all in. I'm just like, I moved all my chips over to the other side. We are now parents. That's our new job, and that's who we are from now on. And she was like completely signed up, and I signed up, and that's what we did.
Yeah, I didn't want to reduce.
I think that era that Elvis just went through from 2 to 5 is the biggest nightmare.
It was a lot of work.
Everything changes every 3 months.
Yeah. And also that your children are so amazing. They're young adults. They're smart. They all have their beautiful individual personalities. They're quirky. Yeah, it's really, really amazing.
I married a very hot intellectual guy.
Well, and he married a very hot, smart, strong woman.
I was just willing to give up everything and not have a life for 18
years. And now is payday, baby.
Yeah. Sure is, baby.
No, now
I have Andy Dick in my kitchen.
What? Right now?
Andy's here.
Maybe I should go get him.
Yeah.
But well, let me ask you a question.
I want to know something.
Unless we're going to do an Andy show.
Okay, so that was 25 years ago, right? Yeah. 24 years ago? How long ago was it?
Almost 24 years ago, yeah.
Did they know that if it was identical or not identical?
Oh, they're fraternal, for sure.
They knew for sure?
It was a fertility campaign.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they don't think that...
Fertility
campaign.
Well,
I'm more interested in what they told you. So they don't think that identical twins have a harder time, three of them, or that, you know what you just said about whether to choose to have two or one.
No, it is purely, and it's statistics.
I just think that they're all amazing because they're all individual humans.
Yeah.
Statistically, triplet marriages don't survive. Statistically, there's more mental health and health problems in triplet kids.
Gosh. And well, we just showed them.
And we just said, well, we're going to pour everything into it. We're just going to go all in, and it's hopefully the cards come up right.
I don't know how a medical professional could say, yeah, maybe
because he
pick
just he
two.
Just,
is that what you're
yeah,
saying?
Well,
no,
yeah,
no. The issue.
How progressive are you as a woman?
Take the small one.
Well, no, what? No,
pick two. Pick one.
Hang on. It was strictly a technical issue.
How?
Yeah. It's a technical issue. The one that's closest to the surface.
No, it was
moats.
Smallest. They wanted to take the smallest.
I'm telling you.
Which
I know.
Was Paulina.
I know how selective reductions are done. It's a technical issue, purely. At that point, especially.
But, oh, I would never have done
but
it.
But be that we just, yeah, she
Simone,
was
Simone, rise up in your woman's
no, but
rights
I'm, I
right
am,
now.
I'm, okay. I'm, but it's he, not he even simply women's said, rights. He, is it human rights?
No.
How can we live with that?
No, listen, he just simply said, here's the stats, go make a decision. He goes, I will get you three healthy kids. But what happens after that, I make no
promises. But you see, I would say, listen, we are, this is what can happen, and we are here to support you, because I like to enable. No. Anytime you're on a call, no. But I just think it's like this is magical for whatever reason. Maybe this is going a bit spiritual, but this is magical you have been given the opportunity. Like you're special people, and that's how I would see it, and that's how you did see it. Although
there is one thing though. There were 4 possible embryos, so we were going to go from maybe 4 to 2. And I was given the phone number to call, and I called this clinic,
UCLA,
and everybody was so sad on the phone because it's such a depressing thing to have to call up and go, hi, I heard about your company and, you know, I may have to reduce it. And it was like I was calling an abortion clinic and I was like, I'm pro-life. So I was like, and I was like, I talked to the woman on the phone for like 2 minutes and I was like, this is not what I want to do. I don't want to go in. I don't want to infect my body. It was so difficult getting pregnant. Like, I don't want to inject something in there that's going to cause the entire...
You could lose the whole thing.
Pregnancy to terminate.
What I figured, yeah.
And but I made that phone call and it was so stressful and so sad. And I said, no. And then I had to convince him and we
waited out.
He was all in.
We weighed out the pros and cons.
Yeah, I said let's walk ourselves through it. Let's make sure we're making the right decision. Let's really think it through.
Let's go and have sex for now. The next 72 hours.
That's how we solved issues. Yeah. We could have problems, and we had to really look at all the details and be super careful. And then I laid on my back for 6 out of 9 months, and they all came out great. So I was very fortunate. I have some massive stretch marks, and I've had a tummy tuck, but that's the least of my problems.
And you've had a breast enhancement.
No.
I know, it's the running joke. Right. One of my clients who found me through a podcast I did with Dr. Drew. So he knew that Dr. Drew and I were friends. And he went, oh, does Drew know anyone? And I went, do you know
for breast
enhancements? Because
she must know someone.
Yeah, she'd had two babies. So the client, the wife, she was just stunning and lovely. And I love them both. They will know exactly who they are. Anyway, and I said, oh, do you know what? I know I shouldn't say this, but Drew's wife has amazing breasts.
So she texts her. Who's your plastic surgeon? Wait a minute. Wait, it gets better. So, Susan, when she asked who your plastic surgeon was, who'd you respond?
God.
It's the best. It's the best.
That's very funny.
So my goodness.
That's the story.
I think you said, I don't know, God.
Well, we're getting dangerously close to sex as a subject
right
now.
We're like at third base. We mentioned breasts.
That was a double, and we're standing out there in the field now. Now let's get down to it.
We're going
to
do this. We're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to come back with some emails on sex.
We're teasing them.
I know.
We're just.
I want to talk about sex. Susan texted me. We're going to talk about rock and roll and sex, and I was like, building myself up here because I'm really not what I see.
It's not instant gratification. It's no longer the 70s.
Okay, after the break. Hey, buddy, welcome back to This Life Podcast. Don't forget to listen also to the Dr. Drew podcast, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast on Corolla Digital, all available at drdrew.com as well. This Life podcast, of course, and to click through on that Amazon banner and support the people that support these podcasts. Check out their stuff. We try to vet whom we bring in here, so it's good materials.
So let's get to it. All right. I couldn't wait to come and talk with you about things because I know a lot of people's sex stories and life story. I know mine. Jim knows mine. It's a lie, the rock and roll sex thing. It's a lie. All of my friends who are very successful musicians were all serial monogamists because we're trauma survivors and addicts.
I have treat sex addicts, rock and rollers.
Nobody that I hang out with. No, I'll tell you why. And we've discussed it.
Okay, but I'm going to tell you, the ones that get into it are hardcore sex addicts, though.
Yeah.
Hardcore.
I'm talking about, and you know who I'm friends with.
Yeah.
There's not what... You don't mind that people think that as an image.
Uh-huh.
I had this experience in 1986.
That's interesting.
I thought, oh my God, I'm 25 and my record's popular. Oh my God, I'm going to just sleep with a bunch of girls. And the second time I did it in Minneapolis, the next morning, the girl said, we have some mutual friends. And I said, oh, really? Who? And she named two musicians that I knew. And I was sitting there, and then she got up to get coffee, and I was like, oh my God, she slept with so-and-so and so-and-so. Just because they're in a band.
Gross. Yeah.
And so I never did it. And then neither did my best friend, who's a singer of a very popular... It just was a thing. Now, are we sex addicts do we love sex or do we love relationships, I would think?
Love addicts,
yes. But sex addicts, very seldom... Not in my circle of friends.
All right.
And so, I think it's...
Is that something unique in punk rock, do you think?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe an ethical Joe Strummer punk rock type world, right?
Yeah.
We think of ourselves as, you know, heroes and savers and all that kind of stuff. It all just fits.
And most punkers had hippie parents.
But why we fit as a community, this is what I want Simone to know. People who were like that, which Dr. Drew treated, a drummer that I know, we wouldn't hang out with, and we socially ostracized, and we thought they were scumbags. And we called them male sluts.
Oh, how interesting.
How about that?
That's great.
So, but it doesn't mean we haven't been divorced three or four times.
Well, that's the love addiction stuff too.
Probably. Yeah.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. What's really interesting, and I was just when I was getting ready to come here, I was thinking, what could their hybrid be between love and sex addiction? Because I am seeing a lot more men now who are not presenting with "I'm addicted to porn." It is very much they are addicted to the attention that they get. Sex is just what they know they have to do, and that they're not BSing. It is the attention.
Listen
the attention,
to that, Drew.
The attention, the attention.
From a prostitute or something? Or from,
no, from girls, Tinder, like people who are
Tinder
in...
Tinder is a big one.
Tinder is
Wait a minute,
like,
so they need to think like their prowess
they want
or they're
to
attractive?
Be with the female, but sex is not the top priority.
Yeah, what really strikes me is, it's actually, you know, we put sex addiction and men often side by side. Sex addiction rather than love addiction. That's fair to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, that new Judd Apatow series called Love, you should take a look at it.
Oh,
my
it's
God,
wonderful.
You know, you're going to have me watching TV
yeah,
all watched, the time.
Yeah, I watched no, that it, as well. I just finished it yesterday, actually.
Me
in
too.
My non-existent
so
life.
So did we.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. While I was
Andy's
shopping on
it.
Amazon.
Andy's in it. Oh, yeah. Andy plays a drug addict in it.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Very good. Yeah.
And it talks about a struggling alcoholic drug addict who's, you know, in and out of the program, and finally she finds her way to SLAA. And I thought it was interesting that it was SLAA, not SA,
and
which
acted,
I thought was right.
She acted out.
Whoever's writing this thing has been through this.
Did she
I guarantee
act out?
She's been acting out the whole show.
Yeah, but was that interesting?
But once she got to that program.
No, she actually, well, a little bit, but then she set a boundary that the show ended on.
Yeah.
And we don't know if she's going to maintain it or not, but it was a very appropriate sort of summation of what her work needs
to be. See, what's interesting, I've got to say about that, because Drew obviously is, you're looking at it from a very deep place and the true, you know, the true place of what is going on, and Bob, you'll see it as well. She is like, and the series is brilliant, it's an entertainment series, she's like most women we know.
Well, that's what she said. Susan said, "Oh, it's just that age." I said, "Oh, she's so sick. I can't watch.
No,
I can't stand it."
See that exactly. And for me, the show isn't about it's not that I didn't go there. I just thought, "Oh, right, great. She's another codependent. She drinks.
Funny.
She fucks.
It's funny. I've been bothered by that all morning because I'm not bothered thinking about it all morning because I thought it's right, kind of. We all have some of that stuff, but this girl really had it.
Yeah, so, no, absolutely. And that's why I was quite surprised.
Is she a 20-something? 20-something?
She's a 40-something, allegedly.
No, she's not 40-something.
Well, then when she does that radio...
Oh, blimey, Susan!
Oh, my God!
No, listen. I didn't think she was either, but you know, maybe she was bullshitting, but when she did that radio thing,
yeah.
She goes, "Hi, I'm a 48-year-old female," and I thought, really, 48? And I don't know if that was meant
but
to be
do you
a
think
joke.
That's, do you think that was Jillian because they were
is
trying
not,
to...
Jillian is not 48. The actress is not 48, trust me.
I think she was trying to cover... Because they were doing fake callers, yeah. And she was trying
so she was
to construct.
Covered. So she's in her
but
late 20s,
she
early
went
30s.
Late
20s, early 30s.
And
I say late 20s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's sort of that period where you're lost, where the women get lost sometimes. And it's,
yeah, and look what happened to me when I was 27.
Me too.
And it was the, yeah, 27.
Well, describe what happened to you. I don't think Bob knows this.
Oh, gosh. Well, I lost the plot. Well, I didn't lose the plot. It's like I really acted out and then decided to marry a con man where I experienced every abuse possible. And
in England or here?
England. And then
came
he,
here.
Yeah. And then he basically, he took money, tried to get money from my dad. And we're not like, my dad's like middle class, you know, it wasn't the Kardashians where you could like sling them. But anyway, and then he came over here, married a Hollywood actress.
Can we talk about who?
Yeah. I mean, it's
Brittany Murphy.
Oh my
and
God.
Then died with her.
And
I
then,
know,
yeah.
They died.
Now,
supposedly, now the rumor is that the moss and mold in
yes,
the house.
Really. Thank you, Drew.
That makes you anorexic and drug addicted, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly for years. And, yeah, I mean, and what was so... No, I can't. Okay, what was so bad?
There's a lot of male con artists that come to L.A. You know that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Oh,
and
English, English con artist.
But he was a brilliant... It's the accent that gets everyone.
Yeah, it really does. I know one right now in Malibu. You just don't even know what's going on.
Yeah. But like, I mean, this guy was...
It's like one of the royal family has come to Malibu that doesn't have a place to live.
But this guy, I mean, this is... If we go down this sort of, you know, sex and, well, the love addict, that was totally me presenting, oh, dear. I mean, it was bad, the love. And it was... It just was... It was so sick and so awful. Mm-hmm. And even to this day that I, you know... I know that there are only a handful of people like that in the world. However,
like
what
him?
Is what is yeah?
Like him? Oh no,
is,
I'm sorry.
I know. Well, it's quite funny. That's why I said in England, and I was like, "There's only it's okay, You know, it's a good place." And then I came to America, and I was like, "No, it's not. It's one in bloody ten."
Yeah, they're all over the place.
No, but I mean, it was yeah, it was bad. But then what happened was because he took
most rehab
a
owners.
Lot of. Oh really?
You know it's that's Susan, it. Susan that's has a. Susan
I'm telling
a,
you. Did you read the LA today, LA Weekly article?
Susan oh, has yeah. a thing for sociopaths too, or they do for her. They sociopaths at her with like yeah. crazy.
And when I was around 27, it was hell.
And she's like
interesting.
They're
27.
So and when,
so
I, when
nice.
We met, I would
are they nice?
Of course,
they
they're nice and entertaining and exciting.
Yeah. Other people don't get them.
And I yeah. right, I know I have a special insight. And
yes,
I, they yeah. suck you dry.
Well, yeah, and, no, they do. The it was with him. He was like really like belly over the stomach, and it was the longer I was in the relationship, like I was fainting on the street, like the thinner and thinner. I mean, it was awful. The
oh
thinner
God.
And thinner I would
and,
get, and
oh
the
my God,
bigger
look what happened to the other girl.
And bigger, yeah, wow. the bigger and bigger. And because she had money, after she died, guess who had the money? The mother. Guess who he was found in bed with?
Oh my God!
You're kidding.
So he was a psychopath. He wow. also tortured my dog. Oh. I had to lose my dog for put my dog in a home for 6 weeks, you know, with a family. It was horrific that my dog would cower around him. This is like oh. a big sort of like 100-pound boxer. Jeez. It was so sick, so sick.
Awful.
But anyway, that is that's me post to go
but that's where you turned around. That's
where totally where I turned around. Yeah. And like and
that was
it
your
is
bottom.
True that was my bottom. Yeah. And I don't know whether they say this in AA, but from a sort of like human perspective and more of a spiritual perspective, it's like the worst, the shittiest, worst, most brutal time in your life turned round to be the making of me finding like
gaining
my
insight,
essence. Yeah,
you
totally
a different existence in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's what I believe those things do.
So one, a lot of women can resonate with that character.
Yeah, and
I mean, you know, as we're older, we can look back and go, oh. But it's very depressing
you know
for Drew to watch. I'm just like, oh, well, whatever. You
oh,
know.
See, that's so funny. Clearly.
Well, I feel all the borderline stuff. I see it all.
Oh,
yeah. I feel all that. I'm like,
can
oh.
we just
and
talk
I was
about
just, I was just talking to Andy, and he said that his friends can't watch the show. It makes them cry.
The recovering
especially
people.
You see
oh,
him
God.
Acting like that.
Yeah.
But oh. but I was like, oh, it doesn't bother me. There's something seriously wrong.
Oh, no, I was about to say. I'm clearly missing the point as well. It's sitting in ordering on Amazon and not going out. Yeah, because
she's
I
just a girl like I was when I was 26.
Do you know what's so bad? I actually watch it for entertainment. I watch it because I see the comedy. Because I love the male character who is that geek and who is just like, he's such a halfwit. And yeah. I think he's brilliant. So
Andy's
clearly,
character?
No, the main okay. guy, Paul Rustin.
Okay,
something.
So let's yeah. talk about something Susan mentioned, which I am coming into.
Drew being the best lover ever, which,
there
by
you
the
go.
Way.
I'm sure. I'm sure of that.
He is.
We've never talked
she's
about it, but
best.
I'm sure of it.
She is the You're best.
Sure
he's the best she's ever had. Sure it's true.
That's
she
what,
announced it on my radio.
I had to, I had to,
we had a world exclusive.
Look at it. Don't blush,
no, but
Drew.
I think, do you know what? And do you know what? I will keep saying that. And yeah. and I said this to Drew at the time. The reason that I say that is because so many people who listen to Drew do not have a role model, have not had a role model as a father. Mm. So we know that Drew is super smart and all the rest of it. But the fact that Drew is like, you know, good lover. I mean, just makes him the best role model. No, but I mean, you know,
you just turned into
women.
A sex therapist in like 2 seconds. Oh, yeah.
That's the thing.
But I just think it's so lovely. And I've got to say, Drew, I mention you so many times in my sessions.
Oh, that's very sweet.
Which is the bullshit that people go, yeah, monogamy doesn't exist. Oh, I'm just not wired that way. Now, that's fine. That's a choice. But don't come with the bullshit. And then, is it possible is the question I get asked. And that's when I mention you. And I say that you have been, like, talk about, you know, the man that every woman wants to sleep with. Only after you've gone, Susan. I will be that respectful.
She'll wait till she's killed you.
Sleep with as many women as you want after I'm gone.
After I've burrowed your breasts.
Unfortunately, I have a long lifeline.
What happened to this podcast?
Oh, yeah, I know. You do have a long lifeline.
But now I can't even remember where I was going.
Well, let's do some emails.
Well, but I want to talk about one thing, though. Because I'm coming into, I just celebrated 20 years of sobriety. I don't know if you know that.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
And it's discouraging to young people sometimes.
To be 20 years sober?
When you be the old, because you just mentioned, oh, the 40-year-old girls or 35-year-old girls are going to tell the 25-year-old girls to look out for that guy. They don't listen. There's a lack of respect of experience. So you kind of have to share it. And so this is what I've been doing about open relationships, for instance. I just had a conversation with a client a couple of days ago about it. He's deciding to do that. I said, listen, I've done that and it never works out. So I don't know how to help you understand that. Let's talk about it. Let's think about it. She's going to be fucking another guy. And that's totally okay with you?
Yeah.
And he just stopped. He's like 22. He's like, well, no, I don't like to think about it.
That's the compartmentalization again.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the kids are thinking that because they grew up on you porn. Well,
they also have had no role. The marriages they've seen are so horrible.
Yeah.
They are aversive to it.
And the splitting. And I always come back.
How do we get better at helping convey the knowledge we have to
young
people?
Here's what I think. I suspect a lot of that is fear of cheating. So if they're already endorsing the cheating and they're the one cheating also, it's all, you know, it's like, it's almost like cutting. You know, they're like in pain, so I'm going to cut myself to make me more in pain. It's a weird thing that people do. It's a traumatic reenactment, ultimately.
And it can a very good defense mechanism, because it's kind of like Linus and his blanket. Remember Linus from Snoopy? You do an excellent Charlie Brown voice, the teacher.
I do.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. I always remember that. That's how Drew hears me. He's like,
she's going, oh.
Yeah, exactly. Both of us. What was I going to say? This is great.
So,
this is ADD.
Just that people don't hear when we talk.
Yeah. How do we get them to hear? Because it's really important.
Linus and his blanket, it's a transitional object. So it's not safe enough to put love in one person.
Right.
So I'm going to put it in multiple people, because then if somebody abandons me, it's not going to be that bad.
Exactly.
And
because they're used to abandonment in childhood.
Yeah.
That was Ryan Kasenoff's business model with relativity for investing in movies, just so you know. Side note. Don't, because there's so much risk in one movie.
Yeah.
Invest in five and maybe you'll win.
Yeah.
But didn't they go bust?
So I like themes that are throughout, right? Okay. You want to reduce risk. Life is risk.
Life
you
is about
throw your heart out there.
Life is about uncertainty. Life really is about uncertainty. And we can't love unless you take risk.
All right, let's take some email messages.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, some emails.
Concerned about my best friend's daughter. She was sexually abused by a half-brother who's in jail. Her acting out was extreme self-harm. She had some treatment. I worry about pictures she is posting. So it sounds like, you know, it's when somebody's been, I think the subject matter of this is when somebody's been sexually abused, a female, then they will reenact. Right, and bring traumatic reenactments upon themselves. This guy says, I just hope, this woman, I think, I would just hate for someone to take advantage of her, and she's at high risk for that.
So, what I think is, I got asked this the other day, and this is so sad with young people who are watching porn, who like are sexting, they have no idea of it. And it was one of my clients, and this was happening, it's a similar situation, and it was happening at school. Her daughter got sexed by another girl in her class. She's 9 years old. And my client was like, oh God, I can't tell the dad. The mom and dad are divorced. Oh, it's going to, you know, I don't want to upset the parents. And I said, okay, so you've got to go to the teacher. You have to make the teacher aware, because this girl isn't doing it because she's perverse or something. She's doing it because there possibly is something going on at home. However, now we can't even say there's something going on at home.
Because it's so common.
Because it's so common. And it has literally become like, oh, getting your ears pierced. If you don't
what I have seen useful and with those young ladies that are doing that is another female gathering a group of them together and educating them about what the young males are up to. They literally have no idea what the men are doing with this, or what they intend with it, or what they're thinking about it. And when you show them, it's just another manipulation, that the boys trade these things.
But do you think you can understand that at 9 years old?
Oh, nine.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, that's what I've just sat in silence.
I missed that part.
Yeah.
No, nine, it's airlift to a mental health facility. You get help with, you know, comprehensive psychiatric.
However, I quite agree with your point and if there isn't somebody within the peer group, because obviously a nine-year-old isn't going to be able to explain
No.
We need to get people in schools and say, okay, this is going on.
Oh, no, they know. Believe me, they know.
Well, are they doing anything about it? Because it just
it's constant. Yeah, well, it keeps happening because the horse is out of the barn, but they're there all the time working on this, but not in grammar school so much. That's a real serious problem. 42-year-old, long phobic reaction to men.
Oh, that's interesting. I
avoid interactions with my personal professional life. I was subject to some trauma. My next door neighbor between the ages of 0 and 5 was convicted of child molestation, but she doesn't know if it was her or not. She just doesn't have an explicit memory of it. I think we could bet it happened, or maybe she saw something happen to somebody else.
Yeah.
So what do you do if you feel phobic about men? You know, there are treatments. You and I had never had to do this stuff, but there's this exposure therapy that are quite effective. Quite effective for OCD and phobias.
Yeah, they do it at UCLA.
They do it at Menninger's down in Houston with great skill.
No,
what does it involve?
I had an OCD client do it at UCLA. It's exposure, the things that you do, like your bathroom routines, right? That
exposure, yeah.
Go into the bathroom, describe it, do your routine.
Yeah, it's sort of dosing up. Let's say you're phobic of men. So the therapist will make a plan of exposing you to these stimuli in a dose-related fashion until over a period of time you start tolerating it. And then they're there with you, supporting you.
Yeah. And do you do it one-on-one or in a group? Because the guy was in group. Would they talk about that in a group?
Probably both, yeah.
I can imagine it being quite effective in both. But my goodness, with that kind of treatment, it's like MDMA. Being used for trauma. Oh my God, please just make sure that you have the best therapist, like a kind-hearted therapist.
If this woman's going to do it?
Yeah, because if you go into any...
When I heard it, I know a lot of 42-year-old women who've had bad relationships and they're just done. She seems like she has insight that now it's manifesting in ways that she feels powerless over.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Rather than cognitively, fuck them.
Point being, there's treatment available.
Yeah, and also
she identifies it as a disorder, not as something wrong with men.
And this could be the opposite.
Do you understand what I'm saying, though? Yeah, a lot of women give up on men because they had bad relationships or whatever.
I still think that's trauma.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, for sure.
He's just saying that there's potential to treat her in a very specific way.
Because she's aware of it. Yeah. She wants to know.
Do you think that she has, if we put it in a label, sexual anorexia? Because there is...
You know, that's a separate phenomenon, right? And that, of course, unless she's mastering the porn all the
time
or something,
who
knows?
I suspect. But let me ask you this. So a lot of my... I'm 55. A lot of my female friends are in their 40s and they're done with men, right?
Uh-huh.
And I always say, maybe it's not men, maybe it's you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, the men that you choose are fucked up. But maybe it's not over yet to find a guy who realizes he's fucked up, wants to get better and have that relationship that you could always have. That's the only hope for people.
I, it's going to happen. But with this woman, I do have hope for her.
Yeah, I do,
And I think that if she can find somebody who basically she connects with and she knows that can hold her, that I think personally doesn't go down the pathological route, but just gives her like that connection with herself, finding her power.
There's another one. This is a girl that has no explicit memory of sexual abuse, but thinks it might happen. Then she describes cutting and sexual acting out during high school, anxiety, sleeplessness. I drink every night to get to sleep. So this is one of our patients.
Yeah. And this is I've had people who presented as if they had sexual abuse. So actually what I would call a sexual anorexic,
sometimes they're manic.
No. Well, this woman... or how I call sexual anorexia, but maybe I've got it wrong.
I want to know what your definition is, because I think I've been called a sexual anorexic by one of your patients. So what is it?
Oh. So
I hear it coming out of your mouth, so I want to know what it is.
My understanding, or how I interpret it, is
that... Because I probably am, I just want to know what I am.
So it's somebody who has a phobia... about sex, so they have a phobic reaction.
What about intimacy?
It's an intimacy disorder, slightly different.
Well, and it can sort of...
It can be together, yes.
How about this? I would say my pattern was, once there is intimacy, once there is true connection and love, I don't need sex anymore.
Oh, no, that's a different thing.
What is that?
Oxytocin overload.
Yeah, well, there's two things. One is that...
Laziness?
You can only be sexual with...
Overworking, too much work.
Only being sexual with people, you can't be intimate. You know, if you're not intimate, you can be sexual. Yeah. That's a trauma split. That's something in you.
Okay.
You've got to heal that so you can
I'm
be sexual.
I'm trying, Drew. I'm trying.
Okay.
But then the other thing was called sexually anorexic. Hold on.
The thing about the anorexia, though, that I would...
Because I really, literally don't care.
Not caring is a little different. That's sexual apathy. Anorexia means you get off on the deprivation.
Oh no, I don't even think about it.
Right, you got to have a little reward from deprivation.
What kind of reward?
Yeah,
would
hold
you
on.
Get?
This. Go on.
Anorectics sort of like, and that's probably the wrong word.
So they're thinking about sex all the time and they don't do it?
Deprivation becomes gratifying. Let's put it that way. Deprivation is gratifying.
But you see, that's interesting. Then perhaps sometimes in my life, I would present myself as sexual anorexic because it is, I mean, it's
you're withholding. Shame. You're withholding.
Withholding, which comes from trauma.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. We're all talking about different manifestations of same material. All right, are we going
to... So what are we going to do with Bob's sex life?
You got more?
Well, it's working out great now.
Okay,
for now.
Good.
You had one other email there about a disabled person that got anal herpes or perianal herpes or something, and they're worried they were sexually abused, but you can get that many different ways, so that's not necessarily that. So I didn't want to go down that path.
I was curious about that one.
Oh. No, that can come off people's hands and fingers, and if it's somebody disabled, they're being handled. And
right. But disabled people do have sex.
If they're having their bottoms wiped or whatever.
Yeah, it can be.
Hold on. This is because
go ahead.
I learned this at college.
Go ahead.
Like the stigma we have about disabled people and not being able to have sex.
Oh, no, it's not true.
They do have sex, and also,
what the disability is and what the injuries are.
Even if there's nothing going on, that's what I wanted to tell you. You just triggered a memory in me. I just found out that our old client Steve died.
Steve who?
The drug addict that was in the wheelchair. Lovely, fun guy. I liked him, so he must be. What is he if I like him? Sociopath.
No. That was Sasha.
Okay, I just loved him.
You liked the Mannix, right?
He was with us for months and months at different times. Anyways, I heard he died.
Oh. Addiction or just...
And no, not of an overdose. You can't live to be 50 and be a drug addict.
Yeah.
That's the truth of it. So imagine all the death that's going to come. If you make it through this wave of death right now,
I know.
None of these people are going to live to be 55.
If they don't get a lot of treatment.
So anyways, that was sad. But he had sex. He had no nothing.
Yeah, but it's different. You guys, it's complicated. It depends what the
question.
Let me read the question.
Yeah.
This is the
See, answer. we got him to read the question.
We tease it. And we pull him in.
Because he said sex was in his mind, so he couldn't feel there.
Family just got a call that they found herpes on my girlfriend's sister. Her sister had to be put in a facility because of mental and physical handicaps. Doesn't say what they are. The reason for the email is that I'm hoping there's no possibility of getting herpes other than someone violating it. You do not.
No, I'm talking about active, involved, disabled people that have no feeling below the waist, but yet two people I know, Drew... Two people have told me they have sex anyways, though they can't feel it, but it's in their mind.
Yeah, it's true. You can transfer.
Look at Drew.
Listen, you can transfer the erogenous zone because all of your body is an erogenous zone.
Some people have zero function below the waist if they have a complete transection, and particularly the autonomic system is damaged as well. Some people have full function but don't feel it, but feel orgasm. Some people have partial function.
Can we get really graphic? He said he would, when aroused in his mind, he knew that he was getting an erection.
Yeah, yeah.
Could not feel it, didn't know unless he looked down. And then the girl, that works.
Could he have orgasm?
You guys have triplets.
Could he have orgasm?
No. Well, he felt like he did. Mostly centered around the female orgasm.
Yeah,
so here's a guy that you would love it. He can just go.
Oh, that's
you must listen to me. One version of many different ways it gets manifest.
But he really wanted to talk about it because everybody assumed that he doesn't have sex.
No, listen. My first, when we were at SC, they throw you into the clinics really early. My first clinic, first week, was a C-spine clinic, and we were supposed to go in and talk to them about sex. So
how'd that go?
It was foolish of them to do that with us because the patients were somewhat new and we're like, what? I'm going to deal with that later. I'm trying to get move my arms. And, it was really just ridiculous. Wow. Yeah.
Going back to what we were talking about, Drew, the email before this one, the question, which was about a woman being phobic. Let's say
phobic
of men.
Male phobic.
Well, it's very interesting. Drew and I did the Ricky Lake show. A little while ago, and they covered a topic where they would have male. Helen Mirren did that show, not Helen Mirren, Jodie Foster, called The Sessions, and surrogates. They would have male surrogates. I don't know whether you've heard about this, Bob.
No, I know about it. I know exactly who you're talking about. I know how it happened. I know everything about
it. And for anyone that doesn't know, what basically happens is somebody who is, let's say, hasn't found anyone to have sex with. Let's say they are a 25-year-old woman and they want to go and have sex. Mm-hmm. Then what happens is they go and have sex with a sex surrogate.
Is that not a prostitute?
Right. And the sex surrogate works with a sex therapist.
Oh.
And and they kind of, I don't know what they do. Now, I've got to say, I'm holding my hand up. I do not know extensive research on this. I do not know.
I don't think there's any.
However,
I thought it was just to procreate. You're just talking about for pleasure? People are doing that?
Yeah, people are doing it for pleasure.
Oh, people that are doing
overcome.
It to have babies.
And however, on this one, this was awful because the guy that they had on the show was basically, my stomach was going. It was like he was re-traumatizing because he was like, yeah, they get really attached to me, but, whatever.
What are you going
to
do?
And it was like, wow. Oh, okay, great. So you're re-traumatizing them. And so if anyone is thinking about trying to break out of a phobia that way, then that isn't what Drew and Bob meant about.
Tale to the 42-year-old woman.
Any trends you're seeing now in the sex realm?
Well, I would say, I mean, the big, big one I have at the moment is love addiction in men.
Yes.
Which is tragic.
I raise my hand for everyone at home.
Yeah. It's
here's what the young men are doing
tragic.
With that. They're settling to be the... Have we talked about this?
Yeah, but hang on about it.
And let's see. They settle to be a friend. They're like, oh, that's the one. She's the one. She didn't
Can I correct
hang
your...
On, hang
I
on.
Want
you
to give
can,
a different
done,
narrative.
When I'm done. And they go, well, she's not so interested, so I just became her friend. And then they'll call Loveline. This is what we're hearing now. They'll call Loveline 2 years into the friendship and go, hey, I put my time in. It's time now. That's stalking behavior. That is stalking behavior. And love addiction does lead to stalking. So
I've also dealt with young men because kids listen to the show and my clients listen, right? Talk to a kid who identified himself as that, but not aggressive, just devastated. That he put 2 years of his life.
All
and this
them.
Girl was sending all kinds of
Bob.
Wrong messages.
Bob.
Sleeping in the same bed, spooning.
Yeah.
Don't believe everything that you hear
Wait,
on the
what
surface.
Are you talking about? That's exactly what I'm describing. You're saying the exact
but you're
same thing.
You're describing
thing.
The boys as aggressive
no.
and psychotic.
No, you're
of.
Taking
okay.
that. I'm saying
I'm defending my kids.
No. I'm glad you brought it up because that is absolutely categorically not what I'm
they're
describing.
Yeah,
devastated.
I didn't hear
they're
that.
They're devastated.
Yeah.
They're depressed. And they're like, come on, it's time. Let's go. It's time for her to step
up. What about
up.
Spooning? What kind of best friend spoon? Like, you and me are best friends. Are well, we? Are we, do we spoon?
Why do women?
W and I spoon
most nights. But yeah. Right? Why do women?
So why do women do that? They're with their little
understand.
Boy toy
they
buddy
understand.
Friend.
Well, because it's all
defend your sex.
It's all projection. So the woman is basically feeding off somebody. The boy becomes the object. She's feeding off that.
His attention.
But she doesn't want to be intimate with him.
He's declared, I'm your friend. I'm your friend. So she trusts that, which is a gigantic mistake.
And so she
wants love. And to be fair to, let's be fair to her, she may very well have said, look, I'm not interested.
Always.
And
yes,
always,
yeah. say,
always
that.
Say that.
And then spoon one night.
Yeah, but you see, I hold my hand up. I have done this, not in the last few decades, not
post enlightenment.
Not post enlightenment. However, I have actually got to say that I probably, but this might have been part of my acting out, but I probably did. I was a bit fair to them, and I probably did like
there you
fool
go.
Around
I love
with them.
That kind of honesty. There's a lot of spooning going on with that relationship
with
that you're,
of,
and
yeah.
lots of kids
Good
are
for
having
you,
it.
Simona. Yeah,
lots
proud
of kids
you.
Are having it.
I know.
And then guess what? They also have their fuck buddy.
The girl
they
or
have,
guy.
The guy also has a girl he's had sex
really...
with who just wants an open relationship.
Jesus, imagine.
And, oh, it's a mess.
But then they're taking heroin, Drew.
How good could it get?
Yeah. But then we go back to exactly the same thing, which is the compartmentalizing. Yeah. Which is, okay, that there we go.
We
that's,
need
yeah.
to be a unified, integrated whole.
And this will blow your mind. It'll either blow your mind or, Drew, you'll go, oh, my God, Simone, what's happening to you? But isn't it a representation of the different egos that we have? So the ego of the body. So, look, I'm giving away my body and you're putting yourself I knew
it's,
his
it's
face
compartmentalizing
but I'm gonna say it's like different egos.
All right, I've gotten very tolerant about language.
Oh,
if somebody wants to talk about sin or the devil or the reward center of the brain, I don't care.
Oh, it's good.
And so if you want to talk about different egos versus me saying compartmentalization, we're all talking about the same
thing. That's
great.
I did a course on transpersonal psychology yesterday, which absolutely, I mean, it's mind-blowing.
We're going to leave it.
No, but I want to talk about the most magnificent sex you can remember having, right? That's what I thought we would talk about. So let me, as a therapist,
you have to describe that?
So there are, this is what I see.
That happens Saturday night.
Couple of times.
Yeah, for these two, it happens every night. Listen, we will every both day, become man. Sexual anorexic
what
around
is
these
it?
Two.
What
it's
is
like,
it
oh my God.
That is almost spiritual connection. What is it from a psychoanalytic standpoint, from a sex therapist standpoint? That thing that is so distinctly different than other great sexual experiences. What is it?
We'll be careful.
I think it's trauma meets trauma.
Well, it can be. That's called intensity, and that's not necessarily healthy.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting.
It's pretty good, though, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's good. I like that. I would call trauma. Yeah, now that is interesting, because then that goes into the love addiction thing, and it's the high, and that isn't real. That is trauma.
It's
the ego. It's I need to feel alive. But I would say that if somebody is in touch with themselves, like these two fine people we have sitting in front of us, so both, you know, emotionally intelligent, Drew and Susan, who have the intimacy, who have seen each other. I mean, for God's sake, they've had triplets and they know everything about each other. They have that closeness. And from there, when you are able to be able to give yourself and kind of say, yeah, this is my essence. This is me. And the other person meets that. That's
what
I think
is trauma.
What
if your essence is trauma? What if
your essence
is
never trauma? No, and we got to come back and do another show about
this. It is your personality.
This. No, it isn't. If anyone says to
Andy
me
Dick!
About personality, hey, it's your ego. It's the personality of your ego. Bob, your essence is pure and beautiful and it has the most incredible energy. When you are in yourself.
Wait, maybe we should keep Simone for the next podcast that we do with Andy.
Andy.
Yeah, we'll do a little bit.
Most of today I've been talking about Andy's relationships because he and I are so close.
We're going to end this one here. Loved Andy. Loved love. Thanks. Fantastic.
I loved it.
The sarsaparilla thing I'd only heard about once. Good.
Everybody
did you invent
that
on the
writer? Everybody loves this show, Andy. I haven't seen it, but I got to go binge on it.
All right. Follow us on Twitter. Yes, also, see Bob at Ask Bob Forrest, at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew. Andy, what's your Twitter handle?
Just Andy Dick.
He's
Andy
periscoping Dick. Constantly.
And mine is at Simone Bien and...
Not underscore Bien anymore?
No. We changed
you wanna
it.
Know, you want to know how attuned to Andy I am? something's wrong.
Well, he's probably bored waiting for us. Right.
Something's wrong in the relationship thing.
The
we
girlfriend.
Need to,
all right, we're going to keep Simone here.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep this going. I also remind you to share our posts, get us on Facebook, like the check the Facebooks and the posts of the Courageous Friends and friends that come on in here. We have links to qualified sponsors at Doctor.com website and also the new website, thislifepodcast.com. So last but not least, be sure to listen to Dr. Podcast, Adam and Dr. Podcast on Corolla Digital and Dr.com. And we will see you next time.
Huh? That's all, folks. Okay.
I don't wanna know what they say. If I didn't walk on eggshells, would you know my name? I was your freak. I don't think of you at all.